Welcome to the Hyphen Church Podcast, where faith meets the spaces in between. We're here to explore what it means to belong, to grow, and to encounter God in the midst of life's questions and complexities. Whether you're here to listen, reflect, or take a step forward, know that you're in the right place. Let's make space together for what God is doing in us and through us. Now, let's dive into today's message.
And we are on the last week of Open Table, this series that we've been going through, talking about how we can live the way of welcome. How can we become people that are living out this way, this going forward? How can we practice the radical hospitality that is needed in order to do that? Last week, we talked about this great parable that, and it is a parable. It's not a story that Jesus is witnessing happening. The parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector, and how it's really important for us to humble ourselves. And it's not about comparison, but it's about compassion of one another and seeing those things. Today, we're going to be also in Luke. Obviously, we've been traveling through Luke. We've been traveling with Jesus. And we're in Luke 19, and this is one of those stories that everyone knows, everyone's heard of, because we have a little song in Sunday school that goes along with it. And so we meet Zacchaeus here in the little town of Jericho, and we're going to talk a little bit about why Zacchaeus is finishing our story of radical hospitality, why Zacchaeus gets to bat cleanup. He's the anchor for us here in our Open Table series. So Luke 19 says this: Jesus entered into Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. Now, when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." A lot of churches, and I think even our homes, have welcome mats out in front of the door. Now, we live in a house that has different mats for each season, you know, because that's an important thing to do. So we have mat storage in the garage, and it changes with the season. We welcome in summer with a different mat, and then there's a fall one, but there's also a Halloween one, and then, you know, Christmas has its own special one, and then the winter. And so we have these mats that are, you know, they're the threshold. They're welcome. Come on in. The door is always, the door's not always open, though, is it? Sometimes it's we go to sleep, we lock the door, so you're not sort of welcome then. But we always leave the welcome mat out. And so a lot of churches also say, you know, all are welcome, you know, sinners only here, those phrases that you've seen at churches before. But a welcome sign, a welcome mat at the door is a lot different than welcome in practice. It's really a lot different than active welcoming, right? Like, we would put out a welcome mat at our church, and we have signs that point the way, but, you know, it's still different than just saying, well, we want to actively welcome. We want to be, and this is the idea of living that way of the welcome. It still requires people to come in. It still requires a crossing of the threshold. It requires a vulnerability of someone to enter into a space they're not familiar with. It might say you are welcome to be here, but notice how it puts the burden on the outsider. It puts the burden on them to come in the door. The door is open. We're welcoming. We're nice people. You're going to have a great time here in the morning. But there still is a responsibility on the shoulders of the person who wants to enter, who wants to cross that threshold. And so in real life, the people who most need welcome are often the ones who are least likely to walk in. And so what does it look like in a church? What does it look like in your house? What does it look like in your life to move beyond this passive welcome mat and into a radical pursuit of welcome? And so we come to this story of Zacchaeus. Now, I want to ruin the song for you today because that's what I'm into doing, is ruining the Bible for you and all of its special things. Let me just say it right off the bat here. The Greek and the English do not tell us who was short. Okay? So if you read this very carefully, it says he wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. That does not tell us if Zacchaeus is short or if Jesus is short. Now, it does not change the story. Okay, someone was short in this story, but we don't know who exactly, and the Greek doesn't polish it up for us. Now I'm going to take it a step further. Because the word short here does not mean diminutive stature, height-wise, physicality, it means diminutive stature in public life, a diminished person, a role in society that looked down on them. That's how we know that that's describing Zacchaeus. Because we're not talking about a physically short person. We're talking about a person who is pushed out by the crowds, who is not allowed in the crowds because of his status in society, of being someone who was, as Luke put it, the chief tax collector. By the way, he's not just any old tax collector. He's the chief among all the tax collectors. So not only is he collecting from the people, he's collecting from all the other tax collectors. And so he's very rich. This is Jesus' final stop before Jerusalem. Jericho is the closest city to Jerusalem. In fact, we read a lot of stories that start on his way up from Jericho into Jerusalem. That is the walk. And then there would be psalms. There would be songs that the pilgrims would sing, the ascent psalms, walking from Jericho into Jerusalem. There are parables that we have read about the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. That was the Good Samaritan. He was on that road. And so Jesus is here. He's finally getting very close. Crowds line the street. He's about to have his triumphant entry. And what does he do? He stops to have dinner with the chief sinner among them. And so Jericho is this wealthy place. It's very strategically located, that if you were going to go to Jerusalem and you needed a place to stop, this is where it would be. He was powerful, but he was socially despised, Zacchaeus was. And so he was isolated. He was on top financially, but he was on the bottom relationally. And so Jericho kind of had Zacchaeus all figured out, didn't they? Because he was so isolated, because he was a man who was so hated in his relationships with other people. He was a tax collector. He was a collaborator. He was rich because he had bled his own people dry. He had taken their money and he had claimed it for his own. And when the crowd looked at him, they saw a category and not a person. Zacchaeus is known by his job, not by his name or who he is. They saw a problem, not a possibility. Their sight had hardened into judgment. And so to the crowd, Zacchaeus was a thief in plain sight. And so really when we're reading this, we really expect Zacchaeus to be another example of wealth, blocking someone from the kingdom. We remember reading about the rich young ruler. We remember Jesus saying, it's easier for a camel to enter the eye of a needle than a rich person to enter the kingdom of heaven. And so we remember these sayings of Jesus, and so we look at Zacchaeus and we say, well, then there's no room for him at all. When we see people as their worst moment, their job title, their zip code, their politics, we stop seeing them. We see what they've done, not who they could become. And so this is the real story in Zacchaeus. This is the real idea that when we stop seeing people for who they are, when we stop seeing people for who they could become, we just judge them on the surface of who they are. We push them out of the crowd. We say, you are no longer welcome here. We see what they've done, not who they could become. And this is the issue. This is what the crowd has done to Zacchaeus by pushing him out. So Zacchaeus has to do something because the Bible has, this is an incredible statement. He wanted to see Jesus. And how many times in our lives are we not giving people what they want? How many times in our churches do people come here who are curious, who have longed to see Jesus, and we give them something else? We give them a spectacular worship experience. We give them a celebrity pastor who makes them feel valuable. We give them incredible buildings. We give them incredible programs. And really, people just want to see Jesus. Really, what's going on here is that Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus so badly that he would do anything that it would take. And so picture this, a wealthy man in expensive robes shimmying up a sycamore tree like a child. Wanting to see Jesus will make us do some incredible things. It'll make us do things that we never thought we would be doing. Because we reach out for that. There are no boundaries to Jesus. Here's the irony in this. Here's the beautiful twist of the story. That in trying to see, Zacchaeus makes himself visible. Because he wanted to see Jesus, all of a sudden now he is being seen by other people. He might feel a little bit ridiculous. Yeah. People that walk into church and don't understand the lingo, they don't understand the Christianese, they don't follow along with the songs or know how to read the Bible or know where John is in relation to 1 Kings. They might feel a little awkward, a little out of place. They might not have a lot going for them. But they want to see Jesus. And so they're going to do what they have to do that. The most important note is that he cannot see because of the crowd. He cannot see Jesus because of the crowd. The crowd has become a barrier, socially, relationally, whatever you want to call it. But the people there are a barrier for Jesus. I think that's so clever. I think that's so amazing because how many times have we become a barrier for other people in seeing Jesus? How often do we become a scandal, scandaleon, the word stumbling block in Greek? How often do we become a stumbling block for other people because they call us hypocrites or they say, you know, we're two-faced or, you know, we look the other way or we just give our thoughts and prayers and don't really get out there and help? And so how often do we become a stumbling block for other people looking? Are we that crowd that have blocked Jesus for other people? Have we become the barrier for the very thing that we want to showcase? And so his climbing of the sycamore tree is socially humiliated. He is humiliated to have to climb that tree to go and see Jesus. And so he abandons his dignity for curiosity. This is a physical action that mirrors his spiritual state. He's desperate enough to break social norms just to catch a glimpse of him. His desperate curiosity exposed the deepest need, not just to see Jesus, but to be truly seen by someone. This is the desperate need that so many of us carry. I want to be seen by someone. I want to be valued. I want to be called worthy by someone. And Jesus will do that, yes. But in doing that, what does Jesus then expect of other people? What does Jesus then say, go and do likewise of the Samaritan? Respect and dignity of other people. Sure, Jesus is going to see you. He wants to see you. But then the people that we don't want to see, the people that Jesus has seen that we don't want to see, what about them? How are they to be seen? This is the desperate need of humanity, to be truly seen by someone, to be heard, to be listened to be accepted. Not to sit in judgment of them, not to count their sins and label them and argue with them about the finer points of the Bible, even though they don't know where 1 Kings is in relation to John. They want to see Jesus. So do that for them. It's awkward enough. It's humiliating enough. They've released their dignity just by entering into the conversation, just by entering into the room, just by crossing that threshold. They've made themselves vulnerable to something. Show them Jesus. Sometimes our hunger for connection requires us to look foolish, to climb trees, to take risks, to position ourselves where we can be noticed. And so Jesus takes that initiative. Jesus stops. He looks up. He calls Zacchaeus by name. Zacchaeus, hurry down, for I must stay at your house today. By the way, a miracle happens in that tree. Jesus knows Zacchaeus' name. Now, I don't know how it happened. I don't know if the crowd was whispering, Zacchaeus is in the tree, Zacchaeus is in the tree. Or because Jesus had been through that region before, he had been through Jericho, so he knew of Zacchaeus. I like to think that he had seen Zacchaeus, and he was just waiting for Zacchaeus. That he had been to the temple in Jerusalem all his life. And here was Zacchaeus watching from a window. Watching from a roof, watching from a cafe. And finally, Jesus is in Jericho, and there's Zacchaeus in the tree. Ah, we got him. Zacchaeus, yes. Yes, yes. Come on down from there. I got something I want to talk to you about. I want to have a relationship with you, Zacchaeus. I know that you've been on the outside looking in. I know that you've been pushed to the margins because of the people in your society. I know that you've been curious about me for a long time, and I know that no one's let you in. So let's go and do something about that. Let's go and make room for each other. Notice Jesus' urgency. I must stay at your house. I have to do it. It has to be now. By the way, if you want to talk to someone, don't invite yourself over. It's really not kind of a good thing. But Jesus can do it. He's Jesus, you know. He has this special power to him. But Zacchaeus was already clued in on that, right? Zacchaeus wanted Jesus to come and stay with him. He just didn't know if he could say it. So Jesus knows what he wants. I'm coming to your house today. And this is a really important part of the story. I'm coming to your house today. Because what today tells us about this is that it's not tomorrow, right? Duh. That's what it means, logically. But I'm not coming to your house tomorrow after you've sorted everything out. I'm not coming to your house next week after you've made amends. I'm coming today, now, before confession, before restitution, before the community approves of our dinner together. I'm coming right now to your house. I hope you don't have a problem with that, because I sure don't. And what Jesus is doing is he just doesn't acknowledge Zacchaeus. He publicly associates with him. He scandalizes the crowd. Oh, time to clutch our pearls, you know? Oh, I can't believe he did that. That's not how my Messiah would act. They grumble, he has gone to be the guest of a sinner. And to share a meal in the first century meant fellowship and acceptance. Jesus is breaking all of the boundaries, and we've seen him do this time and time again in this series. He invaded Zacchaeus' life with relationship before requiring reformation. And I think that's so wonderful. You say, how could he do that? How could he not demand these things of him? Because in our lives, in my life, this is the things that I demand of the people around me. That in order for me to associate with them freely, that I need some certain things from them. Right? I need them to do a few certain things so that my life is going to be a little bit easier. So that the people in the church won't, you know, feel so scandalized. He offered love as a gift, not a reward of something that he had done. He just offers it freely. And I think the crowd grumbled. I think they were upset and scandalized because they felt as though grace had jumped the line. You know the parable that Jesus tells about the workers in the field, and he hires a bunch of workers and says, I'll give you a day's wage. And then he goes out at noon, and then he goes out at 3, and then he goes out at 5. And then he pays the worker who showed up at 5 a day's wage. And then the people that were there working the whole day, they're like, well, wait a second here. I should get more. I should get more because he worked for an hour and got a day's wage, and I worked for a whole day, and I'm only getting a day's wage. And the worker says, what's wrong with this? You knew the contract when you signed it. You knew you were going to get a day's wage. It doesn't matter what I've worked out with other people. You are getting a day's wage. And I think this is our mentality here, is that, no. I've been a Christian for so long in my life. Grace just doesn't get to flow freely to people who haven't accepted it. Grace, we just don't open ourselves up for people that skip a couple of the steps. I've been here working really hard to be a Christian and going to church. And then this person, who is one of the biggest sinners I've ever seen in my life, just gets to have dinner with Jesus. That math ain't mathin'. And so in our hearts, because we are deceptive, because we feel guilty, because we feel as though we are owed something more besides grace. Oh, wait a second here. Jesus, I've been a Christian my whole life. I was baptized very early, and you said you would give me grace and the kingdom of God. And yet here's this guy who's been stealing our money for so many years. How does he just get to go to the front of the line? I don't know what to tell you. This is the kingdom of God. This is how upside down it is. This is what radical welcoming looks like to us. Because now we don't understand it. Now it makes us upset. Now we're starting to get into the gritty details of Jesus' relationship with sinners and people around us. And so how does Zacchaeus respond? Joy. The presence of Jesus changes his very posture. And then comes transformation. Notice that transformation wasn't demanded. Again, Jesus did not show up and say, I'll have dinner at your house if you decide to give your life to me. If you decide to become baptized and join your church, I will then come to your house for dinner. Nothing was promised, right? I'm coming. I must stay at your house tonight. That was it. That's all Jesus says. And Zacchaeus is so happy to be in the presence of Jesus, that Jesus would see him and accept him and say, hey, Jesus is going to come to my house. I get to host him. That this transforms his life. And how do we know that we're having a true interaction with Jesus? Our lives are transformed. We walk around joyful because Jesus is here transforming our lives. And that transformation wasn't demanded, but it was ignited by the presence of Jesus. When Zacchaeus experienced unconditional acceptance, generosity kind of exploded out of him. Fourfold restitution, which was more than the law required. Half of his possessions to the poor. Not because he has to, but because he wanted to. And this is important to remember, though. Zacchaeus isn't buying his salvation. His generosity flows after the welcome, not before it. He feels welcomed into the kingdom, and his generosity flows from that. If we don't feel like we're in the presence of Jesus, if we don't feel like we're in walking in the kingdom, we're not going to be generous with anything that we have. Because again, it's all mine. It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. There is nothing more that I want in my life, except just a little bit more from you, Jesus. That I could have it all and everyone else would be poor. Relationship always precedes reform. And so Jesus declares that salvation has come to this house. This is not salvation in the sense of he has been saved because he's doing all these things. This is the idea of wholeness, of shalom, of restoration. It's not just forgiveness of sins. Zacchaeus now feels whole. Jesus can see the restoration and the transformation in him. When someone truly sees us, not our performance, not our potential, but us, it doesn't make us comfortable with our brokenness. It makes us hungry for wholeness. We want to reach for more. And then Jesus calls Zacchaeus son of Abraham. We sang that in the song today. God of Abraham, son of Abraham. This was a very important thing because it was restoring him to the community. It was saying Zacchaeus really is a son of Abraham. He is one of you people. You need to accept him. You need to bring him in. We're all in this together, and you've shut him out. Bring him back into his place in the community. And I think verse 10 is the mission statement of Jesus. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. Zacchaeus becomes a living illustration of that mission. Now for us, we still divide people into categories of worthy and unworthy. And I think that radical neighboring really disrupts that. Because this isn't just an ancient story. This isn't just the idea that Zacchaeus climbed a tree and he was a wee little man and Jesus came to his house and everyone lived happily ever after. You can see that there is tension in this. You can see that there is a challenge for us. Every day we encounter people that are climbing trees, that are desperate to be seen. The teenager acting out because negative attention feels better than invisibility. The neighbor whose yard isn't perfect because they're barely keeping it together on the inside. Or the coworker whose politics annoy us but whose loneliness is palpable. There's a hospitality that's on the move. Jesus takes the initiative to go to Zacchaeus. Jesus didn't say, if Zacchaeus shows up at the synagogue, then we'll talk. Jesus sought him out. He looked up in the tree and he initiated the conversation. See, for us, a passive welcome isn't enough anymore. All our welcome signs are good, but they don't move toward people. We are called to take the first step into uncomfortable spaces toward overlooked people. I think we can look at calling before cleaning. Relationship will always precede that restoration. Zacchaeus' transformation comes after Jesus' invitation, not before. And sure, we could argue the finer points of why did Zacchaeus climb the tree in the first place? Why was he wanting to see Jesus in the first place? But the true transformation, when Jesus declares that Zacchaeus had restored the household, it comes after he's already welcomed him in. In our world, we want people to look and act or believe in a certain way before we open ourselves to relationship. But we always see that that gospel pattern is reversed. Belonging first, and belief and behavior follow through. Hospitality isn't a prize for good. It's an invitation to make change possible in the first place. Jesus noticed Zacchaeus when others didn't. Seeing the unseen. Zacchaeus was up in a tree, unnoticed, ignored by the crowd, but radical neighboring begins with noticing, with really seeing those who feel invisible. Who's in the trees around us? Who feels invisible? Who is clamoring to be seen by Jesus? Until we see them, we won't move toward them. Radical neighboring embodies Jesus' mission statement. It's not just about receiving people when they come to us, but seeking them out where they already are. And so we say that radical neighboring means taking initiative to seek out those society has written off. Jesus doesn't wait for people to clean up their act. We are his hands and feet. That means we walk to people, we open our hands to them. He offers relationship first and transformation follows. We could even say it in a different way, that true hospitality goes to where people are, not where we think they should be. I think everyone should be in the church, right? Let's just start our hospitality here in the church so that when, if on the chance that they do show up, we'll be ready for them. But having an open table means that we're out in the hedges. We're out in the highways and the hedges, beating the bushes, trying to figure out who can come and fill the Lord's house. Because as we said last week, everyone wants to be seen. Everyone wants to be embraced by their God. And this shows us that. How do we move beyond all our welcome signs to actively pursuing those who feel unwelcome? Well, here's three things I think that we can do, the ways that we can take action this week. The first one is to ask the question, who's in your tree? Find out who's watching from a distance, who's curious but cautious, who's not quite ready to be vulnerable, to walk across the threshold. Who have you overlooked because they felt unreachable or unworthy? Who's in your tree? Who's trying to see Jesus a little bit better, but the crowd is a barrier to them? Your own actions are a barrier for them to see Jesus. The second thing, take the first step. Practice preemptive love. Go to them first. Don't wait for them to come to you. Go where they are. Initiate a conversation. Share a meal. Make that call. Do it this week. Make the call. The one that you've been putting off. Make it this week. Take the first step. Well, you know, it works both ways there. It does. I understand that. But you do it. Okay? You make the call. You send the text. You make the appointment. That's why we have this initiative, 100 one-on-ones in the next year. We want to take the step to invite people out to have coffee, lunch, shopping, whatever it might be, 100 one-on-ones in the next year. We don't want to wait for them to come to us. We want to go to them. We want it to be worthwhile. Take the first step. And the third one is lead with relationship, not with requirements. This is going to be the hardest one. I know it is. It doesn't make any sense. But if we want people to feel welcomed, we need to lead with relationship and not requirements. Offer presence before expecting any change to happen. Listen. Be present with someone. Know that they want to be seen. And trust God. Oh boy. I don't know if I can. Trust God to do the transforming work. No, oh no, 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 no. Wait a second here. He gave us a list of things. We can read the Bible and share it with people, and we can walk them step by step to do. Jesus needs me to do that for him. God needs me to transform people, right? No. Zacchaeus wasn't transformed by someone sitting in his house and reading a pamphlet to him. Zacchaeus was transformed because Jesus walked up to him and said, I see you, Zacchaeus. I know your name and I know your need. And that's what ministry is. Do you know this person's name and do you know their need? And Jesus says, I know your name and I know your need. Let's go talk about those things. There's no expectations of change. There's no transformation because in that welcome, in showing him Jesus, he was transformed. I want to show you this. Everyone that leaves here today, this is like an Oprah Winfrey kind of movement. Everyone who walks out of here today, take a copy of this book. Start with Hello and other simple ways to live as a neighbor. We've just come through this series, Open Table, on ways that we can become better neighbors, on ways that we can practice the way of welcome. And this is going to give you 207 pages of practical ideas on how you can live better as a neighbor and how it can be easier for you to be in relationship with the people that it's been so hard to be in relationship with in the first place. Take this, read it at your own pace, discuss it with people around you, say, oh, we could do that. This changes my mind on so many things. Talk to people in the church about it. Say, hey, how you doing on the book? What's going on there? Anything surprise you? Talk about it in your life group. Talk about it any way that you can. But share ideas on how we can live radically as a neighbor with other people. This week, be the neighbor who doesn't wait for people to prove themselves. Take initiative, see the unseen, go where they are, and then get out of the way because you will watch how God's welcome brings transformation.